and welcome to another episode of
Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
That gentleman's name is Reza.
And the other gentleman's called Craig.
And this is podcast 131. If you are a new listener, welcome, hello. And Reza and I are going to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. In this episode, we're going to talk about ghosts and the supernatural, which is an idea we got from listener Liliana from Colombia. And we'll play her voice message in a moment. But before that, some feedback from Bruno Schwida from Brazil. Reza, what does Bruno tell us?
Bruno wrote, "My name is Bruno and I am from Brazil, but recently living in Copenhagen. My weak side has been adverbial clauses and linkers. I would really like to go through that. For now, I wish you all a great Friday. All the best, Bruno."
Thank you for your email, Bruno. You can find some help in episode 32, in which we spoke about the linkers although, even though, despite, and in spite of. So that's at inglespodcast.com/32. And episode 55, we spoke about but, even though, although, however, in spite of, and despite. And that's at inglespodcast.com/55. There are, of course, more linkers you can use, more adverbial expressions. We will speak about those in detail. We will dedicate one entire podcast to the subject of linkers. And that will probably be, when do you think, Reza? In 3 or 4 weeks, we'll do one?
Yes, if you can wait, Bruno, a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, we'll do a whole episode on linkers.
So keep listening. And we'll bring you that episode as soon as we can. We've got some audio feedback from Roberto from Mexico. So this is what Roberto says.
"Hi, Vicente. My name is Robert. I'm from Mexico. I am very happy I found your podcast. I really enjoy to listen every single one. In my job, I have to travel a lot, and when I'm driving, always like to listen to your podcast. It makes me feel I am not alone. I have to tell you, for me, it's very funny when I listen to you speaking Spanish, because you sound like Spanish. Your accent is very different from what we spoke in Latin America. And I want to ask you something. How do you believe that the place where you learn one language affect the way you speak it? Thank you."
Thank you very much for your audio feedback, your voice message, Roberto. What do you think, Reza? How does the place where you learn a language affect the way you speak? And maybe how does your native country affect the way you learn a new language?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I think both are important factors. It's hard to completely eliminate your native language accent. For example, in my French class, I study French. There's a Scottish student who goes to the class this year, and I can clearly hear her Scottish accent when she's speaking French. This is a Scottish person speaking French in Spain, surrounded by Spanish people, but I can hear her Scottish accent.
And I can hear, it's very common to hear French accents when French people learn another language, because the French accent's very strong, it's very distinctive, and I think it's very nice. Mm. When I hear a French person speaking English, I can really notice that they're from France. But I don't think that's a problem.
It's not a problem.
That's part of the person's character.
Yeah.
It's part of who they are. It's not a negative thing.
No.
It's just who they are.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite nice that you have that characteristic in your personality, in your speech.
Yeah. So it's not anything that you should worry about. It's always going to be there, but don't worry about it, I think, Roberto. And also, of course, where you learn. Can I speak a bit of Spanish now, Craig? I'm going to go all funny now. I'm going to go a bit strange, but here I go into Spanish. Give me a second. Okay, listo. Es que yo en mi primer año en España ya no hablaba ninguna palabra en español y llegué a Cáceres, Extremadura. Y la gente en Extremadura habla así, en Valencia no. Y como no sabía nada, y nada, pero nada, nada, ni una palabra español, yo copiaba a la gente. Y ahí la gente habla así que muy... Es como entre Castilla-La Mancha y Andaluz, es una mezcla. Y yo copiaba a la gente en Cáceres, que hablaba así. La gente decía, where are you going? ¿Tú dónde vas? Y yo decía, yo vengo de Badajoz y pues Trujillo. Cosas así. So I
that's spoke. That's very, very good. I'm very impressed.
I spoke like that in my first year in Spain. My very first year, because it's all I knew. I had never lived in Spain before and I had met very few Spanish people. And I thought, well, this is how you speak Spanish.
But before you said Extremadura, I was thinking Andalusia. I thought that was an Andaluz accent.
It's very similar, very similar. It's very hard to tell the difference between an Andaluz and an Extremeño accent. But I think I can tell the difference, actually. Mm-hmm. Andalusians listening to me will say, no, that's not Andalusia, it's Andaluz. And it's Extremeño. And they're right. Because I've lived there, I can kind of tell the difference. But people who haven't wouldn't know. So, Roberto, yep, I copied what was around me. So, people in South America, Latin America in general, when they learn English, they tend to copy North American English because that's what's nearest. That's what influences them most. Spanish people, most people have more of an influence from Britain or Ireland in some cases, depending on who their teacher happens to be. And you can't take that out of the equation. It's an essential element. And I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, me too. I have friends from the UK who have learned Spanish in Argentina, in Mexico and Peru, and they speak Spanish very differently to the way I speak Spanish, with the soft S and the hard S and different pronunciation characteristics. And that's just who your teacher is or was and where you're living. So different accents makes the world more interesting, I think.
I think, Craig, even you and I here, a couple of guiris, or as Roberto might say, a couple of gringos living here in Spain, we can tell where a foreigner's from when they speak Spanish now, can't we?
Yeah.
When we hear an Italian speaking Spanish, we know he's Italian. When we hear a German, we know that they're a German. We can tell that now. Our Spanish is good enough to know this.
So what I will say is when you listen to English to practice your listening, obviously listen to Reza and I, Inglés Podcast. Also listen to different accents from different parts of the world. Listen to Australians, listen to Scottish speakers, Irish speakers, listen to Americans and Canadians. Make your listening as varied and wide as possible so that you can understand all English accents of the world. Today, thanks to Liliana, ghosts and the supernatural. So here's Liliana's voice message.
Hi guys, my name is Liliana. I'm from Cali, Colombia. Congrats on your podcast. Are really, really beautiful. I would like you talking about Halloween, for example. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your message, Liliana. We know we're late. We know that Halloween has now passed, but we're going to do this episode on ghosts and spirits anyway, and the supernatural. But please remember, we do record these podcasts 2 or 3 weeks in advance. So if you want something for a particular event, anniversary, a particular time of year, please give us a few weeks' notice.
Yes. So instead of talking about Halloween, Liliana, let's talk about ghosts and the supernatural in general.
So Liliana sent us a lovely voice message and she also sent us an email and she says, hello, the podcast was fantastic today. I would like to talk someday about ghosts. For example, do you believe in ghosts? I have an experience about that. Well, please write and tell us your experience, Lily. We'd love to hear it. And we're going to look at some vocabulary connected to ghosts and the supernatural. So ghost is a fantasma. And I think this word also comes from ghost, ghastly. Do you think so? Reza.
I'm not so sure.
Ghastly.
There's probably a connection, but I'm not 100% sure. Ghastly means really bad, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very negative. It's a ghastly thing to do. It's a horrible, ghastly thing to say. What about phantom? P-H-A-N-T-O-M. Is there a difference between phantom and ghost?
They're kind of similar, aren't they? They can be the same thing. Everybody or many people will have heard of the Phantom of the Opera. But it wouldn't sound so good if we said the ghost of the opera, would it?
No.
Phantom's more like a, as in Spanish you say, fantasma, like a character that perhaps you don't quite know if they're real or not. They might be a ghost, but they might not be, like the Phantom of the Opera. We're not quite sure. Mm-hmm. Whereas a ghost is definitely not a real person. With a phantom, it's a bit harder to say. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And I also think ghost is a bit more, it's más amplio. It has a wider meaning. For example, if you edit video or you're a photographer, you might have heard about ghosting in a photograph or ghosting in video, which means you can see very, very, very faint, weak images behind the real image, like a ghost. So I think it has a wider use. And what's the verb? What's encantar in English?
So what ghosts do?
What do ghosts do?
They haunt places.
How do you spell that?
That's H-A-U-N-T. Not hunt, not H-U-N-T, H-A-U-N-T, to haunt.
A haunted house, for example.
Yes, the classic thing you see in ghost stories. Or horror films, a house which looks dangerous, dark, creepy. You don't want to go inside. It's a haunted house. There could be ghosts or spirits in there.
Another word for ghost, but not so common, is a spook, S-P-O-O-K. And the adjective is spooky, which, and let me try this in Spanish. I have never said this word before. Espeluznante? Is that how you'd say it?
Yes, yeah.
Spooky. So a spooky person, a spooky experience, a spooky image, the adjective to describe something. Spooky.
Now, Craig, if you believe in God, God is the supreme power of goodness. What's the opposite of God, or who is the opposite of God?
The devil, el diablo. And there are different names for the devil. The devil could be called Lucifer or the beast. La bestia. Satan. Obviously the number 666. Have you heard this word, Reza? Beelzebub.
Yes, from time to time you hear that word. Also known as the Prince of Darkness.
All those words and expressions describing the devil.
The word evil always surprises Spanish people when they hear it or see it for the first time. But actually it's the word vil. In Spanish, it's just take away the E.
I didn't know that.
If we're talking about the adjective, like he's an evil person, es una persona vil. Although it can also be a noun, it can mean like mal or maldad.
But it surprises me when it's translated as mal, because mal to me means bad, and evil means so much more. Yeah. A bad person or an evil person, there's a lot of difference, I think.
Yeah, for me, I prefer the translation of the adjective vil. I think it's better than mal.
Me too. How do you say maldición in English?
That's a curse.
The curse of the mummy's tomb.
That's a classic in horror films, isn't it?
The pronunciation of curse, the same vowel sound as nurse, enfermera. So nurse and curse. I'll put a curse on you.
That's C-U-R-S-E. And it can also be a verb, to curse, to maldecir. Mm-hmm. Demons and angels are things you often hear about when you're referring to spirits.
They're opposites, aren't they?
They're opposites. So demons are like the creatures, real or imagined,
demonians,
that help the devil. Whereas angels are the messengers or the helpers of God, let's say.
To terrify. If you're terrified or if you have a terrifying experience.
To terrify is aterrorizar. And as Craig said, terrifying is the adjective. So espantoso, he wrote, or even aterrorizador could be. So you could say, I was terrified, or it was a terrifying experience.
And what do ghosts and demons and devils do? They scare you. So the verb to scare, asustar, and the adjective scary. So you have a scary movie, a scary film, a scary story, for example.
A scary film is a horror film, yeah?
Yeah.
We don't say terror, actually. We say, you know, Spanish, you say película de terror. But in English, it's not terror. It's horror film. Terror in English is similar to horror, but it's not exactly the same. We talk about terror more these days to do with terrorism, an act of terror, like something terrible, but not necessarily supernatural, whereas horror is more to do with ghosts and spirits and Frankenstein and Dracula and all that type of thing.
So a horror film terrifies you. Remember the difference between active and passive adjectives. If the film is terrifying, you are terrified. So you are terrified by the film. Fear, the noun, miedo, and to fear, temer.
Or you can say to be afraid. So afraid is an adjective, that's tener miedo. But we say afraid, the adjective in English. We don't say to have fear. We don't say that. We say to be afraid, tener miedo.
Fear the Walking Dead. You don't watch Walking Dead.
No,
do you?
But I know
you don't like zombies.
Not really. They don't do a lot for me, I must say.
So the
they don't do a lot for me.
The first one, The Walking Dead, was really, really good, and then they made a sequel, that Fear the Walking Dead, not as good, bit disappointing. But Fear, miedo.
And have you seen those films, Scary Movie?
They're kind of comedies, aren't they? Not my cup of tea.
Comedy horror films, you can imagine that.
Fright is another popular noun, susto, and the collocation to catch a fright is common. So I caught a fright when I opened the cupboard and saw a spider, or I had a fright.
And what's the verb from fright?
To frighten. F-R-I-G-H-T-E-N, asustar.
So that would be a synonym for to scare, yeah?
Yes. You can frighten someone, frighten a child, or scare a child.
And what would be the adjective?
Frightening is the active adjective, or frightened, ed, the passive. So if the film is frightening, you are frightened by the film. I was really, really frightened when I watched The Walking Dead.
And what about the word frightful?
A frightful shock. That sounds very posh to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it myself, but yeah, people do. It's posh. For me, it just means really bad.
It was a frightful experience.
Yeah. Not necessarily horrible, not necessarily terrifying, but just really bad. Or it could even mean just you don't like it. Like, oh, we went to a restaurant and the service was frightful. Mm-hmm. It was really bad.
Not a word I'd use, but fairly common. How do you say gritar in English?
To scream.
And the collocation, a blood-curdling scream or a spine-chilling scream. Remember, all of these words are listed on the website at inglespodcast.com/131.
So blood-curdling or spine-chilling scream is the kind of scream that, you know, would stop you in your tracks. Te pararía ahí en seco.
Something like this. And if you howl, H-A-W-L, you could be a werewolf. Aullar, I think, is the Spanish. Or gritar, also, in my dictionary. To howl like a werewolf.
Although, of course, other creatures howl, like dogs howl, wolves howl, and other creatures. Craig, incidentally, how do you kill a werewolf? Do you know? Un hombre lobo. How do you kill one?
A silver bullet.
That's what they say, isn't it?
That's what they say.
It's the only way to kill a werewolf.
How do you kill Dracula?
I don't know.
A stake through the heart.
Oh, of course, the wooden stake. It's got to be wood, hasn't it? Yeah. Wooden stake. Un palo de madera. That's right.
Not a beef steak. A wooden steak.
Right. Craig, what about the afterlife? What's that?
Life after death. Uh-huh. El más allá. Otra tumba in Spanish.
Do you believe in the afterlife?
No, I think once you're dead, your time is up, which means your time's finished, and you die. There's nothing. Okay. It goes dark. What do you believe?
I believe there might be some kind of afterlife, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm not totally convinced.
People have died and come back to life, haven't they? And they say they see a light and they go somewhere and then they come back and they believe that there is something after death. I think the desire to believe that there is something more is so strong that we want to believe it, but I'm not convinced.
Well, sorry to
I'll let you know.
Okay, if you ever come back from the dead. If you ever come back from the great podcaster's microphone in the sky. Sorry to sound so macabre, Craig, but should you die before me, what will we do with your body? Do you want it to be put in a coffin? Do you want to be buried? Or what do you want us to do with you?
What's a coffin? Because cough is...
Craig is coughing, but I wasn't saying coffin, not ing, coffin, COFFIN. It's a box for dead people.
A toad.
Where you can bury, bury, put them in the ground. Craig, do you want to be buried in a coffin, or what will we do with you?
I used to want to be buried underground in a coffin, but the last few years I've changed my mind. I want to be cremated, and I want to have my ashes, mis cenizas, spread in nature somewhere around a tree or something. Okay. What about you?
I quite fancy going in a coffin, you know, and I hope I don't have one of these experiences where I come back from the dead, because if you wake up from the dead in a coffin, you're screwed. Estás hecho polvo, because I don't debas.
Yeah, what if you woke up and you're in a coffin and you couldn't get out?
They say it does happen, because occasionally they have exhumed, brought up dead bodies for whatever reason. And apparently forensic sciences can tell when that has happened. So there have been cases that we know for sure that people who were buried and then they woke up because they weren't buried. They were merely sleeping or in a coma or something like that. And for some reason, their body had to be dug up later. And the scientists can tell that they did wake up in the coffin and then later died in the coffin.
Wow.
What a horrible way to go, no?
Well, no worse than being burned alive.
Oh, I don't know. But you would wake up and you'd think, well, am I in hell? There really is a hell and I'm here. And then slow, you try to get out and then realize you're in a coffin and realize you're going to die. Oh, it must be. Can you imagine a worse death?
I bet they were dying to get out of that coffin. To bury, we said, was enterrar. And where are people buried?
Usually in a cemetery.
Cemetery. And inside the cemetery, there are lots of tumbas, which are graves. G-R-A-V-E. Grave as an adjective also means very serious, doesn't it? This is a grave subject or a grave situation. But a grave, the noun, is tumba.
And what's the piece of stone which is at one end of the grave, which has your name and other information on it? What's that called?
That's called a gravestone. A gravestone.
I've also heard headstone. I've heard
also, both. Yeah.
Gravestone, yeah. And headstone, I've
headstone.
Heard.
Headstone. Do you remember what was written on the gravestone of that famous, wonderful comedian Spike Milligan?
Yeah, it's his
what was it?
It was, I told you I was ill. Isn't that brilliant?
That's so good.
Te he dicho que estaba enfermo.
I love that. That's great.
Something eerie. E-E-R-I-E. E-E-R-I-E. What does that mean?
Eerie is like weird, escalofriante, inquietante. Something that makes you feel uncomfortable because it's spooky or not quite right.
And it collocates with silence and atmosphere, doesn't it? So you can have an eerie silence. Or there was an eerie atmosphere in the room.
What about gruesome, Craig? What does that mean?
Gruesome. Repellente. Sometimes you kill someone very violently. There's lots of blood. It's a gruesome killing or a gruesome murder.
So done with a lot of violence and a lot of blood, it's going to look terrible, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Then bruja.
Witch. But the spelling's different because there's witch, W-H-I-C-H, which I have tea and coffee, which would you prefer? Exactly the same pronunciation. Bruja is witch. W-I-T-C-H. How do you remember the difference in spelling? Remember, the T is the hat of the witch in the middle of the word.
And in theory, all witches have some equipment to fly around on. What do they fly through the air in?
Those things from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Palo de escoba, broomstick. B-R-O-O-M-S-T-I-C-K, broomstick.
It's a very eco-friendly form of transport. You can clean the floor and fly in it at the same time.
Yeah.
It'd be great if it were really possible. And what do witches do apart from fly around in broomsticks?
They make this kind of noise.
Oh, Greg, you're a natural.
It's
You're very good at that.
It's called a cackle. C-A-C-K-L-E. To cackle. That's the noise a witch makes when she laughs.
So, Craig, if a witch has evil plans for you, what might she do?
She might cast a spell on you. To cast a spell. How would you say that in Spanish?
Embrujar. Embrujar. To cast a spell. And just the word spell? Un hechizo.
Mm-hmm.
So to cast a spell, embrujar.
So brujería. Brujería is witchcraft or sorcery. Witchcraft or sorcery.
And which is another strange, mythical, or perhaps not mythical, people need a little stick to perform their magic. What do they need?
They need a wand, W-A-N-D. So witches wave their wands when they're casting spells. Wand is varita.
But, of course, witches are usually bad. We think of them as evil. But wands, varitas, are also used by fairies. That's fairies true. Have a wand, and they're las hadas, fairies.
And you can also have white witches. And white witches are good witches, and they cast good spells.
What about the male version of witch?
Wizard?
Brujo. Yeah.
Wizard.
Wizard.
Like the Wizard of Oz, for example. Right.
El brujo de Oz. Yeah. It is, isn't it? El brujo de Oz. Is it funny?
Yeah. Before we continue with our discussion on witches and ghosts, we'd like to mention our sponsor, Italki. Italki is a website where you can find one-to-one teachers to help you improve your English very quickly. We like Italki, both Reza and I have tried it, because it's very affordable, because you can find very professional native speakers teaching you English there, and you get that convenient one-on-one teaching where you can learn at a time that's good for you any day of the week and pretty much any time of the week, because Italki have teachers on their website from all over the world. If you're interested to find out more information, you can go to inglespodcast.com/italki, and Italki are offering 100 free credits to listeners of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig if you sign up through our website, inglespodcast.com/italki. And we'd like to thank Italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
So, to continue our discussion about spirits and ghosts and the supernatural and that type of thing, Craig, we talked about the afterlife as what happens to a person's soul or spirit after they die. You said you don't believe in the afterlife, but do you believe in astral projection? And what is it? Can you explain to the listeners, please?
That's when our body separates from our spirit or our mind, and we maintain consciousness. We know what's happening, but we're not actually inside our bodies. So we have these out-of-body experiences. And again, I just don't know. We don't know, do we? Unless you've had that experience and that's happened to you, how could you ever say you believe it? Or, well, you can say you believe it, but you can't say you've experienced it. So it's difficult for me to say, yes, I think this happens. What's your opinion?
I think it's possible, and I'm not sure if your etheric body, as they call it, your ether, el etero, I'm not sure that your body really does leave you, but I just think maybe it does put your mind, an extreme situation of near death, that might put your mind into the position where it can somehow unattach itself from your body, not physically, but mentally.
Have you ever meditated?
No, I haven't really. I haven't really meditated properly, no. I've kind of tried it in a relaxed way, but not properly. What about you?
Yeah, I have. And when you get into meditation, there is a point where you kind of think about nothing and you're kind of floating. So there's nothing in your mind at all. And that's a lovely, peaceful state to be in. But it's not. I never, when I meditated and I felt that, I never got outside of my body. It was never an out-of-body experience. So I have to say no to that.
Would you believe in things like levitation? That's when they think that people, it's quite often associated with Buddhism and things like that and meditating.
I'd have to see it. I'd have to see it happening.
People can float because their body can be controlled by their mind somehow.
I'd have to see it happening in person and not on a stage. I'd have to be close enough to say, yes, this is happening. I believe it. If I, you know, seeing is believing. If I don't experience it, I can't believe it. What's channeling?
Well, channeling is using communication with the paranormal through a state of trance.
Like a hypnotic trance.
Exactly. So perhaps through hypnosis, perhaps they hypnotize you, and then you can communicate with spirits or even specific people who technically aren't alive. They're dead. They've passed away. Or just spirits in general.
So it's kind of like a Ouija board experience where you're joining hands around a table. And have you ever done anything like a seance?
I've never done a seance, but I have used a Ouija board once.
Did it work?
Well, who can say? The thing seemed to move around, but how do I know it wasn't one of my friends doing it? You know, like, how do I know it was... It wasn't some spirit commanding us to do it. How do I know it just wasn't one of my friends moving and we all followed? You know, you never really know.
The Ouija board, if I don't know what it is in Spanish, it's where you have a
Ouija. I think it's the same.
You have a glass and you move the glass together. You all touch the glass, everybody in the group, and it spells out words on through letters. Did your experience spell out any words?
It went to certain letters, but they didn't make any sense.
Right.
It didn't. We tried to make sense of them, and they just seemed to be random letters. You know, perhaps if it had spelt real letters, that might have had more of an effect on me. But they seemed to be letters which made no sense. Have you ever tried?
No, never. Kind of scares me a little bit. I think I'd feel uncomfortable.
I did feel uncomfortable doing it, I must admit. Whenever the glass started moving, I thought, oh goodness, this is a bit frightening. I didn't think it would move at all. But then later I thought, but is a spirit moving it, or is it just one of my friends who wants to have a bit of a laugh, you know? There was one girl in the group who seemed really keen to prove it was true. And I thought, well, maybe she's moving it just to prove that it really works. You know what I mean?
You never know, yeah. You never know. Dowsing is another word connected a little bit to the supernatural. Dowsing. What's dowsing?
Well, I don't know much about it. I know a lot more about drowsing.
Sleeping.
Yeah, I do often feel drowsy. That's D-R-O-W-S-Y. But dowsing, I think it's something to do with finding water or other materials underground without any scientific help. You just walk around, perhaps with pieces of wood or sticks in your hand or something like that, or little pieces of metal.
And it's supposed to be attracted by the energy underground and take you to water.
And the metal maybe crosses over or something like that. It moves in some way.
And there's something called ley lines that cross the earth that have energy in them.
Do you believe in those ley lines?
No. I'm very skeptical.
I don't know. I think there may be something in the ley lines. And I think it may be scientific. Not spiritual. I wouldn't be surprised if the geography of the earth has created certain lines which somehow, through scientific, not spiritual processes, do somehow channel energy. I wouldn't be surprised. You know how certain planets give off a kind of ray of light around them, like, is it Saturn? Is it, you know, the one with the ring around it?
That's Saturn, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that occurs. So isn't it possible that there are energy lines running through the Earth? I mean, there are volcanoes and things like that, which come from, you know, magma under the ground coming up. So why not energy lines? I think it's possible.
If you have any experiences or stories that you've heard from other people about the things we're speaking about, please send us a voice message and let us know. speakpipe.com/Inglés podcast. And remember, you have 90 seconds to give us your message. The next one on our list is ESP, extrasensory perception, the knowledge of external objects or events, a kind of like a sixth sense, more than the five that we already use, a sense that animals seem to have sometimes. What are the five senses? Do you remember, Reza? There are five senses that humans have.
Yep. Hearing, using your ears. Sight, using your eyes. Touch, using your skin, your fingers. Smell, your nose. And taste, your tongue. Well, your tongue and your nose, actually.
So those are the five senses. Do you think there's a sixth sense, something beyond that?
Yeah. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
And how does it work? How does it manifest itself?
Now, that I can't ask you so easily, but I am completely convinced that there is a sixth sense. I have no doubt whatsoever. What about you?
I was in a room once with an ex-girlfriend, and she was convinced that someone was touching her shoulder. Now, we had been drinking a little.
I see. A little or a lot?
And indulging in certain substances that might have created imaginary experiences.
Hallucinations?
However, no, nothing like that. But she was absolutely convinced, 100%, that somebody was touching her shoulder, and it was kind of like an experience that wasn't normal. There was nobody else in the room. I wasn't near her. I was in front of her, and she said this hand came from behind her, and it made me think. But obviously it didn't happen to me, it happened to her, which makes it difficult to believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is possible, but I am a little bit more skeptical. That means I'm not 100% prepared.
Suspicious,
skeptical, yeah. But I'm thinking more of things like, also ESP, things like when you just have the feeling that something has happened which you couldn't possibly know, and then you discover you're right. For example, there are many stories throughout the ages, of things like mothers just getting a gut feeling that at a certain time something is terrible is happening to their son or daughter, something like that. And often they're just imagining it. But sometimes it's true.
It happens there with twins as well, doesn't
it? Yes, twins seem to know what the other one's thinking.
Telepathy.
They just kind of know. Even if they can't see each other, they just kind of suspect that at a certain time, their twin, who may be on the other side of the world, mm-hmm. is doing or thinking something.
Or they're in pain or distress.
And they're often right. They seem to be right. This has been documented. What do you think of those kind of cases?
I think that's possible. I do sometimes get the feeling that something happens and that it's happened to me before, maybe in a previous life. It's not a memory, but I see someone, I have a conversation, something happens, and I get the feeling that this happened to me maybe in a previous life. Mm-hmm. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, very much so, quite often. We're getting into the area of past life recall here then, yeah.
Yeah.
Slightly different, yeah. But I also think that it definitely happens. Now, whether it really did happen to me in another life or it's just some strange process which happens in my mind, I don't know. But yes, it happens to me quite a lot. Mm-hmm. I suppose a more common term for it might be just déjà vu. Mm-hmm. Déjà vu, when you think, oh, haven't I done this before? Haven't I been in this situation before? But you haven't, but you kind of think you have. It seems familiar in some way.
I don't think deja vu is what it used to be.
Oh, great.
Finally, let me ask you about reincarnation. The belief that a person...
By the way, I knew Craig was going to say that. I just knew it.
You know me too well. You know me too well. Reincarnation, the belief that a person's soul will, following bodily death, when your body dies, will inhabit a new body in the long cycle of rebirths, which obviously Buddhists believe in. Now, I love...
And Hindus.
I love Buddhism as a religion very much. I think it's a wonderful religion. The only part of Buddhism I have a problem with is the idea of reincarnation, because I don't believe in it. I think once you die, that's it. Everything finishes, apart from your body going into the earth, which then creates flowers and plants and trees and nutrients, and there's a cycle of things. But I don't believe I'll come back one day as an elephant, for example. What do you think?
I don't think so, yeah. I'm not... I can't completely rule it out. To rule out means to be sure that something is not true.
To disregard it.
I can't totally rule it out, but I doubt it's the case. But what do I know? Not much.
So what do you think? What do you know? Do you believe in life after death? What happens after we die? Do you have any supernatural stories or experiences to share with us? Maybe you know someone who's had a supernatural experience. We'd love to hear from you. Send us a voice message and tell us what you think at speakpipe.com/Inglés podcast, and there's a link to that in the show notes at inglespodcast.com/131. Happy to receive your emails as usual at craig@inglespodcast.com, or to reach Reza,
it's belfastreza@gmail.com.
For more detailed show notes, go to patreon.com/inglespodcast, and Reza's going to say thank you to our lovely sponsors.
Thank you to Lara, Carlos, Zara, Mamen, Juan, Sara, Corey Finneran from IVNV Podcast, Manuel, Jorge, Raul, Rafael, Daniel, and Manuel Tarazona.
Thank you very much for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. On next week's episode, pronunciation. We're going to look at linking sounds in connecting speech and improve your pronunciation on next week's episode. Thanks for listening, and until next week, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.